Hello, welcome to the Vice Gaming Podcast, year-end special for 2015. My name is Mike Diver. I'm the gaming editor at Vice. That's my job. I'm joined by Emily Gira, freelance games journalist extraordinaire, writer,
etc.
Twitter celebrity.
Well,
I think so anyway. But my standards are very low.
Thanks, Mike.
You're very welcome. And speaking of someone with low standards, Steve Burns.
Thank you,
Deputy Editor at Video Gamer UK.
Very pleased to be here.
For throwing people off top of buildings, I believe. I mean, not in real life, we should stress this. You haven't murdered anyone lately.
Not yet, no.
Not lately. Fantastic. These people are on Twitter. Go and find them. They're fun to follow. We are going to round up some of the best games of 2015 because it seems like a convenient time to do that. So straight off the bat, Emily, what have you played this year that you've really, really liked?
You know what I really like? I really like Undertale. I think Undertale is probably my game of the year. And I feel like a bit of a hipster kind of saying that, considering it's such an indie release. But it's probably the most creative game that I've played this year. It's retro and it's nostalgic, but it plays with the ideas in a way that sort of expands upon the last couple of decades of video game tropes. It's really funny.
I've played a tiny bit of it myself, but we did run quite a positive feature on it actually on the site, so go and look at that, Undertale on Vice. But do you want to just give us a rough idea of what it's about? You said it's like it innovates, and it really does, doesn't it? Because it sort of takes your usual I'm going to kill everyone on my way to the gold or the treasure or the princess, whatever, and invites you to not do that, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you don't actually need to kill anybody. In fact, you could basically decide to flirt your way to the end if you wish. It has a really interesting sort of dialogue system where, well, no, let me explain. It has a very interesting sort of combat system meets dialogue system where you can either fight someone, you know, straight on, and it's essentially kind of a bullet hell style combat. Or you can kind of just go really pacifist and compliment your foe or flirt with them or just let them go. And I find that really compelling. I don't, you know, as a Canadian and a socialist and a generally nice person, I don't really like killing stuff. So, you know, saying to your frog enemy that they look good in green is a good way to end a fight, I think.
I would prefer it if more video game boss battles ended with just some niceties.
Yes.
Just some pleasantries and maybe
making British,
arrangements
right?
for a casual drink later that week. Yeah.
Apologize.
No, it's good. It's by just one guy, isn't it? Toby Fox.
Yeah. Who, incidentally, I Googled this morning. Guess when he was born, you will throw up.
1991.
Yeah.
That's a good guess, wasn't
it? Yeah.
I'm not going to throw up because, you know,
so
young
old
people exist. In fact, you're probably a young person listening to this because you're a Vice reader. And Stephen Burns. Tell me about give me one standout game of this year that isn't Pro Evolution Soccer 2016.
We'll keep that one back.
Keep that one for later.
I'm glad you said Undertale because I've not played it. So I can imagine this going out, people going, these guys don't know anything about video games.
No.
So if we'll go from the sublime to the ridiculous then, Metal Gear Solid 5.
I thought that would probably be up there.
Yeah. It has absolute lorry load of problems. It's one of the most insensitive and stupid games I've ever played. But also, mechanically, its systems are so well-hewn. They fit together so well. They absolutely ruined other games, especially other stealth-based games like Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which looked like it'd come out of the fucking bin after Metal Gear Solid 5.
Not even a modern bin.
Yes, exactly.
No
one
swing
from 2007.
Lids. No.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game. You have to get past a lot of bullshit with it. It's got one of the worst openings I've ever played in the game.
The prologue is
You're really selling it here.
Yeah.
Oh, but once you're past
you
the
have
prologue,
to you have to admit the video games are a lot of them are wank, and even the best ones just have nonsense in
the
them.
The best video games are generally marginally not terrible.
Yes,
if we're
exactly.
completely honest with ourselves. That's why I feel about Fallout, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. But MGS5 is a perfect example of, like I said, making those systems work in concert with one another and making so it gives you the tools to get into the sandbox, and you know, but you've got to infiltrate bases. Now, in games like Assassin's Creed Syndicate, the game wants you to play it one way, so it's bad stealth. Metal Gear, you can do it any way you want, and the illusion is that because everything works together so well, that the game reacts to you in a way which feels natural and spontaneous, rather than he's over there or oh, he's in that bin. How do you know? Everything about it feels like a human would react. Apart from the weird things that pop up over their head,
obviously. Apart from the weird floaty, fiery people.
Yeah,
that's something that comes later. No spoilers
in the universe.
Yeah,
but yeah, fantastic.
Well, I know it has fans, and I say that because I mean we're recording this before the best games of the year runs on Vice, which it will do. But I can tell you, if it's not number one, Metal Gear 5 is certainly up there because we've had votes and a lot of people really like it. Internet famous Joel Golby is a massive fan of Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yes, yes.
That's all he'll play. And I've tried to get him to play, you know, Mad Max and other video games, but he just doesn't want to.
He doesn't have time. He's talking about hair and playing Metal Gear Solid 5.
He does got hair. Trying not to derail this too much, but talking about, you know, I mean, Undertale wasn't very hyped as soon as it came out and was getting those reviews. It was suddenly like the greatest PC game of all time for a while under that aggregation score site that, you know, we don't talk about because it upsets publishers. But that was suddenly the top one of them ever, and so it got a bit of hype. And of course, Metal Gear was massive, but I mean, other hyped games of the year, it's just line them up and shoot them down, I suppose. Not in a negative sense, but just knock them off and see what you thought about them. So, Fallout 4, let's do that. That's probably the most...
It's good.
It's all right, isn't it?
Yeah,
have you been playing it?
Yeah, it's all right.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's janky, jaggy, what would we say? It's kind of broken
it's
everywhere.
It's Fallout, yeah. Right? Yes. but it's also, you know, it's... I have a lot of problems with open world games, to be completely honest. And 2015 is very much the year, I think, of the kind of janky, slightly boring, but very good-looking open-world game.
So where does Fallout fit into that? Because it doesn't look great, does it? Am I allowed to say that?
No.
It looks a bit backwards.
Yeah, it does.
But it is massive. So.
It's, yeah, and that's kind of what you go into it for, right? And it's similar in a way to Assassin's Creed... for me, where you know what you're going to get, right? And how can you really review a game on the basis of being something that it was never going to be, I suppose.
It's Fallout 3 too, isn't it, I suppose? Which is fine. Some people like it. I know you've been playing it, Steve. You know, if you want to watch Steve Burns playing Fallout 4, not 3, it's on the Video Gamer YouTube channel. I've seen you doing it. Video Gamer TV. Nice plug. Star Wars Battlefront, I'll come to you about, Steve, because... Unlike Fallout 4, I suppose. I mean, Fallout 4 looks fine. It does look fine, but it doesn't look very super shiny new gen. Star Wars Battlefront looks amazing. Like, oh my God. Like, the first time I was playing the beta, I just had an accident. But then half an hour in, that accident had gone a bit crusty and I didn't want it there anymore.
Yeah.
That's a really bad analogy. But you know what I mean? It Battlefront has been criticized for just not having much to do in it after a while. Is that fair enough?
I think so. I think it's all show and no go, really. I think it's the perfect game for people who have children and who are time poor and don't want to just, you know, get in and play 5 hours of Black Ops 3. There's a guy
which
works
would
in
be the games campaign
well,
twice,
yeah.
Presumably, yeah.
There's a guy who works in the office above us and occasionally see him in the building, and he's into video games and he knows what we do. And I said, he said, how is it? And I said, yeah, it's okay. I said,
he lives above you?
No, he works there.
Okay, sorry, go on.
And well, he might do it.
People do live in Croydon.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard this.
Well, I certainly fucking
do. And I know if Americans listen to this, I now know they know of Croydon because of Assassin's Creed, right?
Yeah, hey. Oh, yeah. It's a very, very accurate.
Thank you, Ubisoft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, he loves Star Wars. He's got two kids. He's got no time to play video games. It's got that wow factor. It's authentic to the Star Wars original trilogy. But I think the beta really ruined it for a lot of people. So it showcased the best mode and the best map. And what it felt like is what's happening with The Force Awakens now is that there's been 10 TV spots for that film and 3 or 4 trailers. And what's happening, and I see people just, they're getting really tired of it, and they're still hyped, but they're going to realize that when they get into that theater, they've probably seen all the best bits already. And that felt exactly what the beta had done to Battlefront. Incredibly authentic recreation of those original Star Wars movies, but not a lot behind it. Very casual, which is fine, but it also smarted that they seem to have cut half the content and tried to sell it back in a $50 DLC.
Well, I'll pick up on DLC real quick because one of my probably my favorite game of the whole year, which I think has a really wonderful, it's my favorite open world of the year as well, as The Witcher 3, which has Hearts of Stone, which is a kind of standalone slash, it sort of happens after the main events of The Witcher 3. But that's, in terms of DLC done well, I think this year, that ranks among them. Like, that's a really great 10-hour chunk of content for an amazing, probably the best role-playing game of the year, I think, for less than a tenner. You know, and compare that to Battlefront stuff, even the season pass, like, would you get, like, I don't know, 20 hours of pleasure out of that? I don't know. Adding it up, who knows? One more one that to talk about that's been pretty hyped, was pretty hyped, although mainly because it didn't work on PC, was Arkham Knight, Batman Arkham Knight. Did either of you play that?
I have not played that.
Stephen Burns, have you played that?
No, I refuse to play the like it's a moral stand, it's really not. But I really loved Arkham Asylum, and I thought that Arkham City was just too much. It's like a, like we were saying about open world games, just more is better, bigger is better, but it's not. Arkham Asylum worked because it was almost the opposite of that. It was big enough to make you feel like you could wander freely around it, but well built enough to feel that you weren't just in a sprawling metropolis that never, some for some reason, gets light. And Arkham Knight has this terrible fucking Batmobile. And oh yeah, well, the Batmobile sections take up like 2/3 of the game, or a third of the game, but they're rubbish. But still, it's pretty good. And I don't, I play video games for my job, and even I don't have the time to plow into that crap and pretend I'm enjoying it so I can see Batman take on the Arkham Knight.
I did plow a lot of time into that crap. Pretty much, I didn't 100% it. Oh my God, who has that much time in their life? But I did do pretty much all the story stuff and kidnapped all the villains that you recognize. And I did generally enjoy it. I think the way that Batman was in that one was the best he's been in the Arkham series. But like you say, unfortunately, the Batmobile just kind of soured it because it was just rubbish. There's no real other way to describe it.
It seems to be a solution to a problem that does not exist.
No Batman one was can asking,
fly,
yeah.
Essentially. In the context of that world, he can fly.
And he does it really well.
Yeah.
He does it really well. I'm going to move on to exclusives, console exclusives, because, you know, people like to shout at each other on the internet. I assume they're shouting when they're typing in all caps and calling each other slags and other words that shouldn't be aired. But early doors this year, we had two... I'm going to say they were both early doors this year, but Bloodborne and The Order. Right, so they're both PS4 exclusives. Bloodborne, pretty good by all accounts. I'm going to say The Order wasn't as terrible. This is The Order 1886. I'm going to say it wasn't as terrible as everyone said it was.
I'm going to agree with you.
Maybe that's just because after what we're kind of suggesting here, open world fatigue, when you turn it on now, it's like wicked, straight through that, bang, 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 straight through that. The shooting works. It all works. Fantastic facial hair. Everything works, but it's just, it just doesn't do anything new. Were we all a little bit harsh on that, maybe? Some reviews?
I'd give it six.
Six is
terrible.
Six to a publisher is awful. Six to a sensible that's perfectly fine for the type of game it is, right?
Liked it.
Cover shooter.
I felt that because we saw it. We were at their event, right? We saw it at a preview, and it felt like everything had kind of turned against The Order. Public perception was already going against it because some stuff, you know, it's only X hours long, and you have to remember that a lot of the, you have to separate signal from noise, basically, on the internet. And a lot of people don't have time to play through 100 hours of Batman or The Witcher. And I liked it for what it was, but for me, it kept on making very basic mistakes even within that framework, even within what is essentially a very basic cover shooter. And yeah, and it was very cutscene heavy as well, which is fine, and it looked gorgeous. But whenever it hit its stride, it would interrupt you again. So there's that great mission on the bridge, and you get that like Tesla cannon, and you're like, yes, and that's what they previewed. But that's not indicative really of the rest of the game, which is a classic preview tactic. And yeah, but I didn't hate it. And I did say that terrible ending aside, I'd very much be up for a sequel to The Order.
It was a very got very muddled at the end, didn't it? I won't give anything away, but you meet. I think everyone knows. Even if you haven't played it, you know there's kind of werewolvy things in there, but there are other mystical creatures in there. And you're like, and they're never expanded upon. It's just like, oh yeah, by the way, there are these things too. And that's it.
It's very much set up for its own sequel, which may not happen.
Which probably won't happen. Bloodborne did really. I don't think we really need to say much about that. It's a very hard From Software game. It looks gorgeous, I think. Yeah.
It's great.
I really, really liked it, but it's one of the games, many games this year, where I got to a certain point, died horribly, thought I'll pick that up again tomorrow, didn't, because something else came out. I had to do something else, and I just haven't got back to it. So I'm only as far as Father Gascoigne.
Yeah.
Like, I got to him, he killed me, which I believe he kills lots of people. That's what happens in Bloodborne. And I just didn't. I haven't gone back yet, but I should do. That's kind of on my Christmas break list to try and go back to.
See, I mean, what I like about The Order is that it feels like the antithesis of so many games on this list. Like you were saying, it's such a short game by comparison, but it feels like it's almost part of an argument that's been ongoing, and I think that it's enough to have a 6 to 8 hour game. And I think it's not a strong game. It's not the strongest argument to make for short games, but it's still beautiful. It's still an interesting world. And I think that at the very least, those two things are better than a lot of these open world games can offer. Right. You know, with something like Assassin's Creed, again, I keep kicking it, but I have such fatigue. I was utter fatigue. And I didn't feel that with The Order because because it's a new IP.
Absolutely.
It's
London.
I appreciate that.
Well,
I appreciate a new IP.
I really like, having played around a bit in Syndicate and thinking back to The Order, and because they're both Victorian London.
Yeah.
I just like I think the dirt, the horribleness of The Order feels more authentic than the kind of shiny cobbles. Everyone's all right, apart from when they're shanking each other in Assassin's Creed.
Those QTs.
A couple of Xbox One games real quick. Halo 5 is a Halo game. I think we've all established that, even when you're not playing Master Chief, it's still a Halo game. I toyed around with it for an evening, kind of liked it, haven't gone back. One Xbox One game I really have liked this year, I don't know if either of you played it, is Rise of the Tomb Raider, and which is dead on arrival, effectively, just through being an exclusive. You know, you got to wait a year for the PS4 version. But it's a really good game, and I know where they've done it, obviously, because they thought they were going to be up against Uncharted 4. I think it's kind of better than a lot of the Uncharted stuff, this new Tomb Raider.
See, I found the story so tedious.
The Tomb Raider story.
I really struggled.
It goes off a little bit, doesn't it? I think it starts really strongly, and then it's just like, yeah.
Well, it's essentially Lara Croft saying,
I want to go after Dad with a shitload of guns.
Yeah.
And there is a shitload of guns in it. I mean, I get quite into. I like games. When this makes me think of The Last of Us, you know, when like the combat isn't quite right, and it's not. You wouldn't call it floaty, but it feels a bit panicked. Mm-hmm. Like that's what Rise of Tomb Raider felt to me. It's like, you know, you're never quite aiming quite where you think you are unless you are behind cover. And so much of the cover is destructible in that anyway. So like if you just get pinned down, you have to move or they're going to kill you. Anyway, I thought it was nice. And it looks beautiful. Like, again,
it does look amazing.
It does look really good. From the start, again, it's like, here we are in Syria, here we are in the snow. And by the way, we can do sand and snow really well. Anyone play the Wii U game this year?
No.
No, I have. I like the Wii U a lot.
You're the one.
So
we made the same joke at the same time.
I'll just say that Super Mario Maker is one of my favorite things. If you grew up loving those kind of platformers, you make your own levels. And my son, who is nearly five, it'll be five by the time this goes out, probably.
Is that contingent upon this going out?
No, it's not. It might be four. I have no idea. We'll find out. I promise you, I do know my son. Super Mario Maker's great. We've written about it on the site. Splatoon is really good. We haven't really written about that much on the site because there's not much to say. It's a really, really Nintendo online territory claimer shooter. I really like them. But games we kind of love to hate. I've lost the time now. We've got about another 11 minutes to go through this. We're going to crash things in. I think we've said enough about Assassin's Creed Syndicate.
Yeah, nobody likes it.
No one's really into it. I want to pick up on a couple of things really quickly. FIFA versus PES and Guitar Hero versus Rock Band. Because like FIFA versus PES real quickly, hands up for PES.
Yes.
It doesn't work on podcasts, but I've put it anyway. I know that Steve likes it. I like it. I think that's a bit of two football games. Guitar Hero and Rock Band. Who played what and who had most fun with which?
I reviewed both of them. And I really enjoyed New Guitar Hero. And I said in the review, it was kind of like a little apology, I laughed like a pissed hyena when they announced it. Because I was like, so it's an FMV game in the rhythm action genre. And it's got music television underpinning it. Just thought, who the fuck came up with? And you know what?
Someone from 1993.
Yeah,
came
exactly.
Up with it. Yeah.
You know,
Marky Mark make my videos.
Wow, pretty much, right? But with less or fewer abs. Mm. And yeah, I played it, and the new guitar works perfectly. So it's not 5 frets in a row; it's 6 in 3, row 3. So in 2s, basically, and it makes even kind of so you have black and white buttons one over the other. And it makes even the most simple play difficult to begin with, but it feels a lot more natural to move. Instead of just moving your hand a lot, you have to move your fingers a lot more.
It's a lot of rewiring in your head.
Yeah, the pinky, yeah, right? Yeah. Why can't I move this? But, you know, the FMV stuff, you think it's not going to work, and a lot of it is really overly elaborate. Mm. But then you play it, and you're like, oh, okay, I get this. But the music station stuff, I can't believe it's the year fucking 2015. And it works. Like, you know, what's up next? Because you have to use tokens to pay for stuff.
Oh. Well, you don't have to.
Yeah,
but it streams the songs to you, and you can just play along with them. But if you want to choose your own.
But so you go on the Rock Channel, and maybe Judas Priest is coming up in 5 minutes. So you go, right, I'll get on Twitter and act like a dick for a little while, and come back and play some Judas Priest. And it felt like Guitar Hero, they real thought into, despite its anachronistic mechanics, bringing it into this age. Whereas Rock Band felt like Rock Band 4 felt like Rock Band 3.
Yeah, Rock Band didn't feel like it had done anything new. I
has a solo.
Have found the solo stuff works really well, and you know, in a way, it has more flexibility for a guitarist than drummers. But you're talking about the Guitar Hero Live, the Guitar Hero TV element, and I found myself like reverting to myself of like 15 years ago, playing along with Korn, and just being like, oh my god, I've just like full comboed Korn. And suddenly Freak on a Leash is the best song in the world. Yeah. And like Paramore, I don't give a shit about Paramore, but like the Paramore song that's on that live streaming thing, can't remember what it's called. She's rolling around on a bed and there's balloons or shit, you know, I don't know. But it's brilliant.
That's the best part of it.
And Calvin Harris even. I'm playing on with Calvin Harris going, I'm not sure I hate really how this man with a passion. And I'm just like, yeah.
But it introduces you to new music in a way that the old set list system... Well,
none of it's new.
New music to you.
Yeah, maybe.
If I've not seen it.
I can't imagine anyone telling... Well, I guess kids don't know who White Zombie is, maybe. But, yeah.
And that video is 100% the worst thing that's ever happened on the planet.
It's really terrible.
If you've not seen it, White Zombie, Thundercat 65, it's the worst thing ever.
And you can play along to it with Guitar Hero. But Guitar Hero is one we like. Okay, New Need for Speed, which just came out. You talked about... What game were we talking about this all at nighttime? Batman. I don't understand why the New Need for Speed is all at nighttime. Can anyone help me with this?
Too many graphics for daytime.
Yeah.
I think it really wanted to recapture the Most Wanted level of popularity and all of that. And Ian Dransfield, the freelancer, he did a... that's who he is now, just a freelancer. He wrote our review for it, and he's like, why is it so slow? Like, this is a Need for Speed
game. Oh, it does
game,
get faster.
Which needs more speed.
I got my car quite fast in the end.
Really?
Yeah. I did hang in there for quite a while, though.
Are you saying that Ian Dransfield has reviewed this game wrong?
No, not at all. But I was getting my Honda Civic up to around about 145 miles an hour, 150 miles an hour, some tuning.
You know what both those games have, and there's a little bit of a segue, but both those games have FMV, and one of my favorite games of the year is an FMV game, which is Her Story.
Yes,
and
we'll touch upon momentarily.
Very, very well. Okay, will you crack on?
Well, should we leave Need for Speed? Because I was gonna.
No one cares about Need for Speed.
It's all right.
I am loving this year of FMV, though.
Oh, it's I'm a big fan. I think it's great to see it being reclaimed without it all being Ground Zero Texas. one of my favorite Mega CD games. Not a problem with that.
You know a lot about Mega CD FMV games.
I had a Mega CD. I still do have a Mega CD. Sue Shark didn't have, but I did have Night Trap and the Sherlock Holmes game on the Mega CD was amazing. Black Ops 3 I got written here, but it's Call of Duty. Do you like shooting people in the face online? Yes, by Call of Duty is fine. Her Story, indie games. We talked about Undertale real quick already. I've got Rapture down here. Rapture is a nice ponderous walk around. If you like it, it's by the Chinese Room. Looks very pretty. Leaves you thinking about the end of the world. Ori and the Blind Forest, I'm going to include as a Microsoft exclusive that I thought was quite good this year. I think it's on PC as well.
It is very good, yes.
I really like that. That's kind of Metroidvania with... It looks cute, but it's actually rock hard. Soma, I actually haven't played, but it's written here because lots of people keep talking about it from my end of year thing. That's Frictional Games, isn't it? Who made Amnesia, The Dark Descent. It's Amnesia the Dark Descent meets Bioshock, isn't it? It's underwater.
Yes.
That's the vibe. Which leads with her story for an indie game. Right, that's Sam Barlow, straight out of Portsmouth. So as a Southampton boy growing up, I should hate him. I don't know if he's from there, but he lives there.
And that's enough.
Someone jump in with her story then. Tell us a bit about her story real quick.
So her story, indie game, for me, it kind of came out of nowhere. I sort of ignored it for a while as my Twitter feed started filling up with commentary about this game. And I thought, when I first looked at it, this is the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. It is not the most beautiful of games, but it's very much like time traveling back into the mid-90s and becoming a private investigator. And it's probably the most interesting format for storytelling that I've seen in a video game in I don't know how long, because you are literally just searching through databases. And as someone who grew up in the 90s with alternate reality gaming and stuff online, which is entirely basically just, you know, kind of private investigating, but in your basement, it scratches such an itch for that. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are about it.
I really, really liked it. And I think that one of the most intelligent things about it is it feels, you go into the game with a set of preconceptions. So almost everyone I've spoken to has the notebook. Mm-hmm. And so in the game, you are piecing together old footage of an interview with a woman who may or may not have murdered her husband.
We don't know.
And you are left to kind of fit it all together. And at first you do feel like a detective. You think that the end game is to work out if she did it or not. And there's lots of contradictory evidence and red herrings and all the interviews. And you find, like, she says something, like, or you see a tattoo on her, and then you search tattoo in the database.
She plays a song, doesn't she?
That is a low point for the game. But the best part of it is that the game confronts player expectation and their role within the game in a way that few video games actually do. And towards the midway point, you start to feel that you're the one who's essentially being played by it. That sounds like an old, like, tag, you're the one. But you start thinking, okay, because you don't know who you are. And you think, one of those few games where you get like hours in and go, actually, who the fuck am I playing this game? And then you think, am I a detective? If I'm a detective, why am I looking through 20-year-old footage? Why isn't someone else? Why am I on an old 90s IBM PC compatible thing? Like, and in the end, you know, that gets kind of resolved. But the game feels, in a way, if most video games feel like 80s and 90s big budget action movies, this one feels like a kind of 70s conspiracy thriller where it never actually wraps up and you're just left to kind of think, well, maybe that's my ending. Yeah. What do I take away from it? And for an FMV game where you just watch a woman talk about what she has or hasn't done, I think that's an incredible achievement.
Yeah. I was thinking about it this morning and what I was going to say about it. And because I knew we were going to talk about some open world games. The weird thing is, her story feels more open than any proper open world game this year in terms of the player having absolute control and agency of their direction and what they want to do. Because all these kind of go anywhere, do anything, it's your own adventure. No, it's not, because you've got all these quests and you've got to do them. Like, no one is telling you anything in her story. No one's holding your hand. It's entirely up to your own intuition and your own, you know, investigative skills, exactly what we're talking about. And I think it's massively refreshing. The only problem that I can really level at it for Sam Barlow, who made it, is whatever he does next, and it's not going to be anything like her story because you can't repeat that, will be measured against it, but it'll be nothing like it. So it will constantly be this high watermark for him, but you can't repeat that game. That game cannot exist again now, can you? You can't repeat the formula. Yeah. It's not like Halo to Halo 2.
It's the kind of logical maximum or end point of what he was working on when he did Silent Hill Shattered Memories, which has the best menu in video games. That sounds like a weird thing to say, but again, it's like VHS style. You kind of watch, when you go to an option, it fast forwards or rewinds through the main character with his kid. And a lot of the game's themes are very similar. So he's gone to that extreme now. Without all the ghouls and running around Silent Hill, he's made this fabulous game. So yeah, it's that. I think it sold pretty well, very well considering the aim. So who knows, if I was him, I'd be on a beach, to be honest, and leaving it for a few years before I followed it up.
I wish him well, because it's nice to see, you know, these, a bit like Toby Fox, you know, it's good to see these kind of people trying to do different
unless
stuff.
Unless they're younger than you.
Unless, well, everyone's younger than me. You're both younger than me. So just really quickly, other stuff that I know is going to be placing quite high in our Vice Gaming end of year list. Just give me a few lines on each, I suppose. Tales from the Borderlands. Anyone played that? Telltale Games' take on the Borderlands universe.
I didn't play it.
No one's played it. I've just started. Just started. Carolyn Petit wrote it up for us for the Vice website. Loved it. I know that other writers loved it. Anyway, it's Telltale style, but it's Borderlands world, blah, 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 blah. You don't need to know about Borderlands. That's good. Rocket League.
Wonderful.
Jet-powered football.
Madness.
Yeah. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. I wrote about happy places in gaming just the other day. Like, it won't be the other day by the time you hear this, but and I just love Rocket League. However shit a day I've had, I can just go on that for 10 minutes, play two matches, and I'm like happy. Just like, yep. Yeah. Smashing the shit out of cars and, you know, losing. It doesn't matter if I lose 7-0. It's like, it's still fun. I think that's a good thing. You've not played it, Burns?
I did. I gave it a 7.
You gave it? So, you reviewed it?
So that'll be me dead on the streets.
But you know what, though? It probably is a 7 out of 10 game because it's dead simple. It doesn't do anything startlingly original. 7 out of 10 games can be amazing fun, right?
It has amazing moments. From when we were playing it with like the online component and all that, it feels that's a game with an amazing tale. Like a lot of games and a lot of movies, whatever, is very like front loaded. Get the first weekend, get the first week sales, whatever. Rocket League was given away with
the PS Plus was masterstroke,
amazing. So that has just grown organically. I know people who aren't really into games who love it because it's one of those, it's a concept you can get. It's football with cars.
Yes.
How? Yeah. Everyone's gonna play.
Cool. Football with cars. I really like it. Life is Strange. Who's been playing that?
It's very good. Yes.
It's very good.
It's very good.
It's Telltale again, isn't it? But it's not Telltale. It's
essentially. I mean, yeah. I think it's one of the best offerings of an adventure game in quite some time, probably since, well, I'm a big Dreamfall Chapters fan. So since that.
Since like 2001, 2002.
But it's, you know, it's when the first games where I look at the characters and I'm like, oh, those people are like me, which is always pleasant. And it's essentially the story of a high school girl who's going through high school girl stuff and who can travel through time, as you do.
This,
you know?
I understand this is a problem most high school girls experience.
Well, yeah, I like to go into it.
At least in a fashion capacity.
Yeah.
I've borne witness to that. Says me, who still looks like it's 1994, Kurt Cobain never died and Bush are massive. Mm-hmm. That's almost contrary to say. That's a terrible thing to say. Okay, Until Dawn, Steve Burns. So I know you love this.
Until Dawn. Yeah, again, if we're talking about the
Sony PS4 horror game.
Yeah,
marketed, horror inverted commas game, I suppose.
Marketed terribly, released badly, and really one of my like favorite gaming experiences of the year. It's been the year for games which feel like they've come out 20 years ago, but far more polished than the ideals that those people were going for. It's like the end game.
It's a point and click game, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, but it's clever as well. I think towards the end, it kind of ties itself in knots a little bit. But I wrote a piece about it where at first it feels like you're just playing a like a slasher film and playing as the characters because it flits between your archetypes of like jocks and nerds and, you know, sluts and whatever. And then it turns out that it confounds those expectations. But about midway through the game, you start to realize that you're not actually playing as the star, you're playing as the director of your own horror movie. And again, it's like her story. It's one of those where a very intelligent game, halfway through, you're like, oh man, like I've just been done again. And towards the end, it kind of runs out of steam a little bit. But what it does that a lot of horror games don't do is it gives you enough time in the beginning to get to know the people who you are playing as or shepherding, you're like a stagehand putting them to their deaths, or not. Yeah. And I lost one of the characters. And I won't say who because really you want to avoid the spoilers. And I actually felt, oh man, because I wanted to get most of them out alive. Yeah. It feels like the next gen version of Clock Tower that I always wanted, beamed out of my own brain.
it's also worth pointing out how incredible the evolution of Until Dawn was, how it started as
a PS3 Move game, wasn't it?
Yeah. Like, remember Move?
Control to unzip her jacket, I believe, was one of the things.
Yeah. And the fact that it's evolved into this, basically this fully fledged, very cinematic, smart slasher, game is baffling. I do not know how those steps were taken.
Yeah. And I don't know what Sony are going to do with it. I mean, because it's done well critically, right?
Yeah. I think so, well.
I don't know who's buying it.
Yeah, I think it's all
it
quite
was very expensive.
And
For a relatively small game, I suppose. Yeah. You know?
They should have released what they should have done. And you always used to get, when speaking of Move, you used to get those, oh, it's fun for all the family and all that, so all that advert, you know, all the marketing crap. Until Dawn is the game that's smart enough to let you play it as, you know, as a group would decide to play it. So it's the whole Scream thing, but without being really cliched. So you know what's going to happen in the game. And again, as the director, and it's the perfect game for people to watch you play and help make those decisions with you. And they should have released it at Halloween, and they should have targeted,
or at least re-promoted it at Halloween.
Yeah,
like an offer or something.
I saw a preview, and they had like their little slice. It wasn't a vertical slice, but it was like this bit. And the main character is in a bath, and there's someone standing there, a clown outfit.
Thingy from Heroes. Isn't
Hayden Panettiere.
She does shampoo ads as well.
And
fantastic.
I spoke to the producer, and I just said, is it a dream sequence? I don't understand. Out of context, the game makes absolutely no sense. So in that regard, I understand it could be quite a hard sell. But it should have been at Halloween. It should have been a little bit less. Sony should have just eaten that loss and really pushed it as one, like something that you can't get elsewhere. And you can't.
They still could, I suppose. You still talk about games having
next
a tail.
Halloween.
You still talk about games having a tail. That could be one of these ones. I feel it already is one of these ones that, like, you know, it gets a little bit mislaid at the time. And then a year later, when people are like going, oh, the PS4 is 3 now. Look at the best games of the PS4, and everyone will pick Until Dawn.
Like, it's where the press get exposed, I think, because there's so much kind of cliquiness and clubbiness, and you go to a lot of preview events, and people have generally the same opinions, and in games criticism, big new releases are scored a lot the same. And Until Dawn just took a lot of people by surprise there. But again, when you first saw it and the Move stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it ended up being one of my favorite games of the year, absolutely. One of my most memorable games of the year. It's one of the few ones I played this year where I'm just like, I genuinely like to play that again.
Yes.
And I will at some point. I've also written down here in terms of, I realize just running over, but I've wrote down Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate. It's on 3DS. Came out this year. Loads of people liked it. Mm-hmm. Either of you played it?
I've not played it.
No.
It's portable Monster Hunter. If you like Monster Hunter, it's great. Just to wrap up, because we've talked about wonderful, wonderful good games and a few rubbish ones, but I've written down here, what was proper garbage this year? Assassin's Creed, really, you really, really hated it.
It angers me so much to see such a long-running franchise just not grow in any real way.
But they've got
a hook thing, which means that you don't really need to climb up on much anyway. So it's like,
it's not great, but. But then again, when was the last time there was a great Assassin's Creed, I suppose?
Yeah.
I mean, or a really great Ubisoft game.
Rayman Legends?
Well, true, but I think there's a great article in Edge about how they have, and it's meant to be this, like, oh, the dream team, there's this, like there was the Star Council decide who's what's going to be in the game. And all their games have towers. And I wrote in my review of Syndicate that whoever makes those decisions or the mechanism that makes those decisions is actively harming their games. And you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You build this amazing world, but you still have to shoehorn all this crap in. And then Karl Marx turns up.
Yeah.
Florence Nightingale turns up. And it has that
you dress
moment.
Up as Sherlock?
Yeah. And
Arthur Conan Doyle's in it, isn't he?
Yeah. But Evie is
who's the female protagonist, I should say, if anyone doesn't know.
Yeah, she's a lot more fun to play as than Jacob, her twin. But yeah, it's this kind of moment where she goes on a mission with, and she meets Florence Nightingale, and you have to save this young girl's life. This young girl's the leader of this like pack of urchins, but she's going to, you know, become, you know, really important. And it felt like they were like, oh shit, like Assassin's Creed is just the most male dominated thing in the world. And they have these really awkward conversations where it's like someone went, can we have two women talking about something that's not a man and related to the world? And I just thought, it just must be so much pressure to get everything in. But to make a good game, you can't just be like, oh, we've got a female protagonist, so now we need to do this, which is a direct response to Unity.
Yeah.
And then just kind of put it in there and then see how it goes. You just can't get away with it, really. And it's so obvious in its way.
It's weird because we had, on Vice, there's quite a positive write-up of it, which, each to their own.
Are they still in this office?
Would they like to pop in? Well, it's freelancers. Freelancers get a say as well. Was there anything else that really stunk up the place when you were trying to play it? I mean, I think I've steered clear of real shockers this year, generally.
Well, Beyond PS4 re-release is going to be out.
The Beyond Two Souls. I liked Beyond. Well, I liked is too strong. I would probably play it.
You'd sit through it.
I'd sit through Beyond Two Souls again. I got really... Is it a parental thing? I don't know. I got really protective of the character in it, just like I did in The Last of Us, because I'm that guy.
That must be you.
That's me. That says terrible things. But I mean, there were shit games. I don't need to go into them. I got in trouble for saying that a particular 3DS game was all about tits. But so did Jim Sterling this year. I'm not going to go into it.
You're in good company then.
Because pricks on the internet will be upset about it. But yeah, I think we're done. Undertale's your game of the year, Emily?
Yeah.
Metal Gear 5, mm-hmm. Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, we should, just to be absolutely clear, exactly. Not Ground Zeroes. I mean, that was great, but it also came out last year. And I really like The Witcher 3. So there you go. If you're going to buy three games with your Christmas funds from Grandpa, who never sees you, then, because you're a shit, then go and get those games. Undertale's on PC.
Uh-huh.
Metal Gear Solid 5 is on anything you can play games on, pretty much, mm-hmm. unless you're still using a Xbox 360. I think it is on 360 and PS3, isn't it? Yeah. God knows what it plays like.
I've got a copy
like.
On my desk. It's
still wrapped.
It's a Russian promo copy.
is that
how low regarded it was from their own firm.
Have you bought it? Like, is that a collector thing?
No, that was sent by the firm.
They sent it. And yeah, Witcher 3 is, that's just new gen stuff, because the world is really, really pretty and the Xbox 360 would die if you put it inside it. Thanks for listening. Bye.